Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to Senator Dodd's Teletown Hall. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. If you should require assistance during the call today, please press star and then zero. And as a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to our host, Senator Dodd. Please go ahead, sir.
Well, thank you to everybody who's on the line here. I really would like to thank Insurance Commissioner Ricardo Lara for convening this virtual town hall. It is critical to get the correct information to our constituents in such uncertain times. I've been a small business owner, a nonprofit board member, and served in local government for over 14 years. All of these sectors are incredibly challenged by this pandemic, but small businesses have been especially devastated by months of shutdowns and slower sales. The vast majority of business owners and employees did the right thing and complied with the public health orders. A good business owner wants to keep their community healthy, and they know the health of the business is directly tied to the health of the entire community. We've learned that most business insurance does not cover interruptions caused by a pandemic. Even when businesses have reopened, they will be forced to have less customers and follow new health regulations. We know this is not an easy time to own a business in California, so we hope today that we can address some of those challenges. We have also seen how this pandemic has more severely impacted parts of our community that were already struggling. Hospitality workers, single parents, students, seniors, and many others have been hurt by the impacts of this virus. Businesses can't reopen if their workforce is sick or afraid of being infected. We are guided by science and public health, and California has been successful in preventing our healthcare system from being overloaded. But as Dr. Fauci recently warned, we are still only in the beginning of this pandemic. We need to keep wearing masks in public, washing our hands, and being 6 feet apart from anyone outside our household. California also faces the recurring threat of destructive wildfires. This last year was one of the driest on record, and already this season wildfires are popping up on dry and windy days. My office has worked for years on improving and reforming our electrical utilities and addressing the threat of wildfires. We introduced more legislation this year, and there's still much more work to be done to ensure that we have a safe and affordable power system in California. Today we will learn about what individual homeowners and neighbor groups can do right now, literally in their own backyards, to make their communities safer. I'd like to introduce our panelists today. Of course, we have Insurance Commissioner Ricardo Lara. We have Sonoma County Fire Inspector Carleone Safford. And we also have, and I'm trying to find it right now, Bianca Blomquist, who is going to be representing the business community, and she can kind of fill you in. Oh, here it is. From the Small Business Majority and Fire Preparedness. No, that's Gary. So it's Resources for Small Businesses. Sorry, everybody. But with that, I am just honored to be able to introduce my former colleague in the California State Senate and now Insurance Commissioner Ricardo Lara.
Thank you, Senator Dodd. It's great to hear your voice and hope you and Mary are doing well during these insane times. I'm happy to join you once again to give you and your constituents an update on the work we have been doing on their behalf. As you know, CAL FIRE is expecting above normal significant large fire potential in Northern California in June for lower elevations and increased fire potential for July and August in upper elevations, and the Gulch and Quail fires that erupted just over a week and a half ago, I believe, are a reminder that wildfire season is already here, whether we're ready for it or not. If we have another wildfire season that damages and destroys homes and businesses, my department, again, will be there to help everyone recover. Following the Tubbs fire in 2017 and the Kincade fire last year, my department staff joined the local assistance centers to help people with their insurance needs. We also organized insurance workshops where we met one-on-one with wildfire survivors to aid in the recovery process. As you know, before my election as insurance commissioner, we supported legislation to expand rights of fire wildfire survivors as a member of the state Senate, and also with SB 824, which gives protection against insurance non-renewals to everyone living in or near the perimeter of a declared wildfire emergency. Last year, we put the law into effect for the first time, and I'm glad to say more than 1 million homes are protected until December 2020 from non-renewal. I've also called on insurance companies to extend their time limits for paying insurance benefits beyond what the law requires, as many still have not rebuilt from the Tubbs fires due to the delays beyond, you know, people's controls. So as directed by AB 1875 by Senator Wood in 2018, the California Department of Insurance has also created a homeowner's insurance finder tool that can direct consumers to companies that are writing policies in their area. That is on our website at insurance.ca.gov. Also, the homeowner's insurance finder does not guarantee that a homeowner can find coverage, since companies may decline to write individual homes based on their particular characteristics or location, even if they write policies in the general area. This is especially true for those living in areas with wildfire risk. My department continues to work with the legislature to promote home hardening and other strategies to make sure insurance is available and affordable for folks. I also want to just take a second again to recognize Senator Dodd, who has been a tremendous leader in fighting for better protections for wildfire survivors. This year, we continue to fight with SB 872, authored by Senator Dodd, sponsored by my department. If passed, it will mean survivors can receive advance payment after disasters. The important piece of legislation provides protection for homeowners who have suffered a total loss or a loss of use. It creates the ability for advance payments after disasters, streamlines inventory process, and gives a 60-day grace period for premiums after a state of emergency. And, you know, in addition to wildfires, this year we face the threat of COVID-19, and would be remiss not to mention several actions I have taken to protect policyholders during the pandemic. Because of the stay-at-home orders, we have seen fewer accidents on the roads and fewer insurance losses at businesses. I've ordered insurance companies to return a portion of their premiums to businesses and drivers affected by the pandemic for March, April, and May. You should not have to do anything to receive the refund, and insurance companies must provide this relief as soon as possible. I've also requested insurance companies to give consumers a grace period to pay premiums through at least July 14th. Many of the insurance companies have honored that request by offering flexibility to consumers and our businesses during the COVID-19 emergency. I encourage you to contact our department at 1-800-927-4357 or by visiting our website at insurance.ca.gov. If you have any questions in regards to these measures or want one of our insurance experts to help review your business coverage, I also want to briefly just talk about what we've been doing regarding the numerous complaints we've been receiving on business interruption insurance. Many businesses have looked at their insurance policies for possible coverage. As you know, each policy is a legal contract between the business owner and the insurance company. And since March, we have seen dozens of lawsuits around the country, including here in California, which concern the interpretation of these policies and whether these policies cover losses due to COVID-19. I can tell you we are monitoring these cases as they move through the courts, but I have taken several significant steps to address business interruption. Many businesses have asked, why can't I just simply force insurance companies to pay out these claims? We don't have that statutory authority to do so. And again, it complicates itself given that we can't go back as a department and open contracts that have been agreed upon between the business owner and the insurance companies. But we have been learning that some insurance companies are denying business insurance claims without a thorough investigation or even discouraging business owners from even filing a claim. And that is simply unacceptable. In response to numerous complaints, I've required insurance companies to comply with their contracts and California law by thoroughly investigating every single business claim, interruption claim caused by COVID-19, just as they would any disaster, whether it was a fire, an earthquake, or a flood. My department will be watching to make sure that every claim is fairly investigated. It also allows us and allows you to start a paper trail. Should you not like the response you hear from your insurance companies, please give us a call. We've transitioned the majority of our staff to telework, and these are insurance experts. We understand insurance can be complicated. We can help guide you, help give you the information, and what are the best options for you and your business. Again, we have insurance experts ready to help and answer your questions in multiple languages. You are talking to an actual person. This is not just a recording. And you can, again, reach us at 1-800-927-4357, or you can reach us and submit your question at insurance.ca.gov. Thank you so much, okay. Senator Dodd. Look forward to answering your questions.
I'm a little warm. But, yeah, thank you. Okay.
Can you mute your phone, please? Thank you very much, Commissioner Lara. We're going to be speaking about resources for small businesses. Bianca Blomquist with the Small Business Majority. Bianca?
Hey there, and thank you so much for having me again. I just want to take a moment to thank the commissioner for all the work that you've been doing to help small business owners.
I didn't know where the air conditioner was.
Excuse me. Could you please mute your phone? Please mute your phones. Thank you. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, just thank you for everything you're doing to help small business owners with their insurance issues and others. I know that your office has been very active in letting small business owners know about any kind of fishy practices or, you know, not so above board practices. So we appreciate it. And thank you, Senator, for having us on again. It's so important to get these resources to the business owners in your district. And thank you to the inspector for keeping us all safe. I live here in Sonoma County and recognize absolutely the importance of all of this. But to get to the small business portion of this event, Small Business Majority is a 501c3. That means that we are a nonprofit organization. We help connect small business owners with free, low-cost, responsible resources in their community, but we're actually a national nonprofit. We have many offices here in California, but we have offices throughout the country. We engage with small business owners on a myriad of macroeconomic issues that are impacting their business, so affordable health care coverage, insurance issues, accessing capital at times like these, disaster loans and disaster preparedness, among a few other issues. We connect the small business owners with policymakers to elevate their voices, and we also connect small business owners to local, state, and national news syndicates to make sure that the media and other small business owners are hearing directly from small business owners what's going on and how policymakers can respond.
All right. Terrific. Now for a discussion about fire preparedness and resources with the Sonoma County Fire Inspector's Office, Carolyne Stafford. Carolyne, welcome.
Thank you very much, Senator Dodd, for this opportunity, and I want to thank you, too, for all you've done to promote solutions for all wildfire issues at the state level. I work with the County of Sonoma Permit Sonoma Fire Prevention Division as a fire inspector, where I'm also actively involved in wildfire planning, updating the county CWPP, and multiple things wildfire. I also work actively with our county's nonprofit Fire Safe Council, Fire Safe Sonoma. So here we are at fire season again, this time following a frighteningly dry winter in the midst of a global pandemic. I know that fire officials, emergency managers, governmental agencies are all very, very busy creating plans and contingency plans to deal with this year's wildfire season. And likewise, what I'm truly hoping is that residents are also planning and preparing for wildfire. There are so many really large issues at play in the wildfire situation. We have climate change. We have electrical delivery. We have overgrown forests. We have huge issues. And what I really, really hope is that residents are focusing, in addition to trying to find solutions for those large-scale problems, first they're focusing on the things that we can immediately control, which are the vegetation on our property, our homes, and the emergency planning that we do for our families and our pets before wildfire season really hits us. Defensible space is absolutely critical for many, many reasons. Now, defensible space regulations were written for average fire conditions, which when you look at the news and you see these enormous events that we've been having is a little disheartening. But it's important to realize that 95% of the fires which start in nationwide, including California, take place under those average conditions for which the defensible space regulations that exist are very efficient, both to keep your home in a defensible state and also to keep a house fire from moving into the wildland and then growing into a really big problem. Additionally, combining good defensible space with hardened structures can help even in worse than average conditions. So if you harden your home and you have your defensible space, you're really moving the ball down the field. It's especially important on a community level. One house with defensible space is great. 10 houses with defensible space is more than 10 times greater than one house with defensible space. That's why fire department inspection programs are so important to create entire communities that are more resilient. Setting out to learn what to do not only increases your odds, it will make you feel better. I know that's true for me. If I just get up and spend an hour before I sit down at the computer and start working outside, working around my house, weed eating, moving things around, I feel better for the rest of the day and generally more secure as we move into wildfire season. You know, 5 minutes isn't a lot of time to delve into all the details of what you need to do and how to do it, but here let me just outline the most basic principles. So I'm going to start with an awesome fire researcher named Dr. Jack Cohen, who many, many years ago made the following determination. Home ignition in wildfire is primarily a function of the fuels within 100 feet of the home and the vulnerabilities on the structure itself. That is to say that we can best reduce potential for ignition by modifying vegetation within 100 feet of structures so that plants and trees are maintained in space to reduce wildfire intensity and spread, and by modifying structural elements on the home that make it vulnerable to ignition, especially by embers. Decades of subsequent research has not disproven Dr. Cohen's basic assertion, but it has provided us with much great detail about exactly what the most vulnerable elements are and how to reduce them. First, the basic principles of defensible space. Within 100 feet or to the property line on your property, the closer to the home that the fuels are, the more risk they pose to the home. So you really need, when you're looking at your defensible space, start at the house and work outwards to make the improvements that you need to use. Think in zones. There's a new zone that we're talking about. This is not yet part of regulation or code. We're calling it thus far Zone Zero, which goes from building walls out to 5 feet. In this area, we should be effectively non-combustible. That means that the surface materials, any mulch you have, should be non-flammable, not wood or redwood bark, but rock or hardscape. Plants should be well-maintained, low-growing, and really look at the stuff that you have in that 5-foot zone. Garbage bags, garbage cans, boxes of things. We tend to store those things up against our house. Really think about, would this thing ignite if embers fell on it during a fire? And again, this is not yet part of defensible space regulation. I think we're moving in that direction. This is best practice for you, though. This is critical. So zone one is the zone from the houses out 30 feet. This should be lean, clean, and green, with no dead and dying vegetation, only well-maintained plants that are spaced so that fire can't jump from plant to plant straight up to the house or up into the tree canopy. Zone two is 30 to 100 feet. This area can retain more natural vegetation. The primary focus there is on removal of dead and dying, ladder fuels, and separation of trees and shrubs. So the home hardening thing, we talk about it a lot. I think a lot of people aren't really too sure exactly what that means, so I'm going to give you some really basic principles. First, 80% of home loss in wildland fires is due to embers, which are little tiny bits of burning stuff about the size of a pea that are flying around like a on-fire blizzard during the fire. They cause home ignition through multiple mechanisms, by landing on and igniting near structure items or plants, or by getting into the structures themselves through vents or other openings, and then burning the house from the inside out. So the principles we'll be talking about are to help fix those problems. So Dr. Steve Quarles, who worked for many years for the Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety, came up with a series of recommendations for what we do. They are, in addition to good defensible space, especially in that 0 to 5 foot area, his priorities are, number one, take a look at your roof. It should be a Class A construction. If you're not sure if your roof is Class A, get a roofer to come out and do a roof inspection and start looking forward to planning to replacing that roof. Your vents, which are the places the air comes in and keeps the building from rotting, vents need to be either retrofitted to a wildland-urban interface WUI-compliant product, or at the very least, cover those vent openings with a mesh having an opening of an eighth of an inch or so. Windows are vulnerable because they break from heat. So if you get wildland-urban interface rated windows, which are dual-pane with one tempered pane, that's important. Replacing wooden decks with a non-combustible product is a good thing to do, pretty big ticket item. If you keep them scrupulously clean on top, so really, once again, watch for the flammable items that you have sitting on your deck throughout the fire season. Keep them clean on the surface, and do not store your old firewood pile underneath the deck. That's going to help a lot if you can't replace it. Siding is the last of the priorities, and I've called this out because it's usually the first thing that people say when I say structure hardening. They think of their siding. Risk to the siding, by and large, is controllable, especially with that 0 to 5 foot non-combustible area. So you would just want to make sure that fire can't creep up to your wooden siding and that your wooden siding is intact enough not to harbor embers if they blow onto the structure. So those are Dr. Quarles' 5 priorities. The rest is up to you. Those structure hardenings are not mandated by code. Best practices, you just have to start knocking them off one by the other. So I hope that everybody can rush out and go visit a couple of websites to learn about defensible space and structure hardening and wildfire preparedness.
All right. Great, Carleon. A lot of good information there. We're going to start off with our questions we have gotten. I mean, it's really amazing how many questions we've got in here. I'm going to read the question, and we'll have one of our guests answer it. We're going to start out with Commissioner Lara. The Insurance Commissioner posted a table of dollars in and dollars out for each major insurance company, showing that since the fires, they are paying out more in settlements than they are taking in premiums. But insurance companies make most of their money on their money, not on their premiums. Can the commissioner include each insurance company's overall income from their doing business in California, as the other figure is only one piece of the picture?
That's a good question. You know, insurance companies do make money on the investment of premium, and sometimes also at times make an underwriting profit when their losses don't exceed the premium. That has not been the case in the past couple years, when losses from major wildfires have been far higher than the premium that the companies are collecting.
Okay.
So generally, a consideration of what the insurance company's recent loss history has been is a key factor in projecting what losses are like to be next year. However, major losses such as the wildfires are considered catastrophes, and so those losses are spread over 20 years or more, soften that impact so consumers are not hit with even larger premium increases. Thanks.
Well, that makes sense. Okay, thank you, Commissioner. Now we're going to go to a business insurance excuse me. I'm sorry. We're going to move right now to I think you already really addressed this, Commissioner Law. I paid my insurance and understood there was it included business interruption insurance. Why isn't the loss of a business due to the COVID-19 pandemic covered? I think you did cover that. Some people say, if it's not specifically, maybe we'll just change the question. If it's not specifically excluded, is that something they should just document and demand an answer for?
Well, I think the first thing that people need to know is that not all policies are the same. So we would need to look at the specific policy to better understand what coverages and exclusion the policyholder has. So if, for example, if a business has a business interruption coverage, but their insurance company is telling them that these losses are not covered due to the exclusion in their policy, we recommend filing a formal claim with their insurance company and at least start creating that paper trail. Insurance companies are legally required to fairly investigate a claim and formally respond back to their respond back with their coverage decision and the reason for any of the denials that they may make.
Got it. Thank you. Now a small business question. What resources do small businesses have available to assist them during COVID-19 and how do I know if I qualify for any of them? Bianca, can you handle that one?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you. I mean, it's no secret that California has been hard hit by COVID-19. There's virtually no business that hasn't been impacted in some way. I mentioned our third-party independent polling and research, and these poll numbers came from just the beginning of May. And they said that an astounding 92% of small business owners in California say the coronavirus has impacted their business, and 44% of small businesses have already closed or are planning to do so. To give you an idea of how vast this problem is, there are 3 million small businesses in California alone. So they need help. There are, fortunately, a ton of resources available to you as a small business owner, whether it be federal funding or state funding. There are also local grant programs that are available, and we'll get into that a little bit later. But primarily, in terms of the federal funding, the Paycheck Protection Program is still up and running. There, as of last week, was $100 billion left in the program. If you're not sure if you can qualify, go ahead and apply. But basically, the qualifications are pretty minimal. Any business that has 500 or fewer employees, tribal businesses, independently owned franchises, self-employed workers, independent contractors, gig workers, sole proprietors, they're all eligible to participate to apply for the Paycheck Protection Program. It's also important to remember that the Small Business Administration, the SBA, they've relaxed a lot of the rules that applied before COVID-19 for the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program, the EIDL. That's directly through the SBA. And then with the Paycheck Protection Program, I know folks sometimes can get confused by checking the SBA website. It's also important to know that the SBA affiliation rules don't necessarily apply to PPP or other CARES Act loans eligibility. So again, tribal businesses, independently owned. If you're self-employed, you can apply. If you have 500 employees or less, you can apply. Gig workers and sole proprietors as well.
Well, perfect. Thank you. Now we're going to move into Carolee Owens area, and let's get the next question here. Are you working with county or city leaders to be sure there are contingency plans to protect and evacuate the homeless in the event of a serious fire? I think obviously this would be more obviously for you for Sonoma County.
Yes, and the agency that is the most directly involved with evacuation planning and all is our local Department of Emergency Management. So that is not directly in my kin, in my day-to-day work. I know that our emergency managers and the emergency managers across the North Bay are deeply committed to making plans to take care of all residents in the event of wildfire evacuations, and they're working overtime to do that this year. They are planning for a bad fire season, if for no other reason that COVID-19 is going to create a lot more problems that are going to require more aggressive alerting and more active advanced planning. So I know that those plans are in place. People are moving forward. All segments of the population are being considered in those plans.
Perfect. And, you know, I know that after the last time, it wasn't done well in any county. Nobody has ever, you know, had this type of thing happen to them in recent memory in such a large fires. But I think we're learning all the time, and I know you're right that they're working on a plan for the homeless as well. So thank you, you know, for that. Insurance Commissioner, this is another question. Fortunately, I have not had my homeowner's policy canceled, but I know many others who have had theirs canceled. Please tell us what criteria insurers use to determine whether to renew or cancel. What can homeowners do to minimize the risk of cancelization?
Thank you. Well, you know, first I'll say each insurance company creates its own list of underwriting eligibility standards to determine which homes it will be willing to write or renew. Those standards include an array of criteria that vary from one insurer to the next. Some common considerations, though, for underwriting include the age of the home, the effective age of the plumbing, heating, electrical system, the condition of the roof, the loss history of an applicant or the insured. Other things are fire protection rating of the local fire department and other characteristics of the property that may create a hazard. Wildfire models now play a major role in determining eligibility by analyzing the fuel load, such as trees, brush, and other vegetation. Slope is also considered, and accessibility of your property, and assigning a score. I believe there should be a requirement for insurance companies to write a home that has hardened against wildfires, and I'm pursuing legislation on that as we speak. Also, look to your local fire department for more information about how you can reduce the risk for your own property, and also continue to advocate with your local leaders for community mitigation, essential fire services, and enforcement of property maintenance rules that are, you know, kind of the three key pillars that are vital and that we keep hearing people have issues with throughout the entire state.
All right, perfect. Okay, Bianca, is the money depleted from all the COVID-19 small business assistance programs?
No, not at all. And there's, as I mentioned before, there's still quite a bit of money left in the Paycheck Protection Program. And I neglected to say this at the onset, the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program, the smaller program that is facilitated directly through the SBA, reopened for non-agricultural businesses as of Monday. I've already spoken to a handful of small business owners that I've been working with in the area that were able to get their EIDL funding approved. It is important to remember the differences between EIDL and Paycheck Protection Program. I won't get into them in too much detail here. Folks can for sure reach out to, you know, your office or me directly to figure all that out. But the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program is the straight loan. It is not forgivable like the Paycheck Protection Program is.
All right, perfect. Okay, Carolyn, Is there a program to help or force neighbors into doing necessary tree cutting and vegetation removal work?
Codes and ordinances vary greatly across the counties of the North Bay. Every county has state responsibility areas, local responsibility areas, and municipalities. And the defensible space ordinances in each of those areas can be and usually are different. So in state responsibility area, the Public Resource Code 429091 is what governs defensible space. In local responsibility areas, your county most likely has codes and ordinances, although not all do. Sonoma County, we just put amendments on our local ordinance 13A for defensible space in local responsibility areas. And municipalities, likewise, are going to have their own codes and ordinances. Now, the rules that govern what you can do or what you can attempt to force your neighbor to do is going to depend on which area you're in. So you'll need to figure out, first off, if you're in the SRA or the LRA, and you can do that by calling your county or your local fire department. But at the end of the day, the only way that a property owner can be forced to remove fuels on his or her property is if the fuel is determined by a fire official, if it's determined that a violation of a specific code exists, and then the process of forcible abatement can start. So you should check with your local fire department or your county or CAL FIRE to see what the mechanism for lodging a complaint is, and move forward from there. However, as someone who spends a lot of time on the phone with folks who are having issues, sometimes there is a neighbor that is a problem, but often I think that you really need to remember that the highest risk to your home is probably within 5 to 30 feet of your home. And so it's super important that you start by focusing on your own house. I think that it's sort of human nature that we don't want our property to be the risk. We want it to be somewhere else, either the neighbor or the park down the road or whatever. And I think that so much of what we can do is really within 100 feet of our homes that I really encourage folks to make sure that their own defensible space has been taken care of before they start really worrying about the neighbors. And that is not to say that egregious violations don't exist on neighboring parcels. But I, again, would really encourage you to start with your own house and then start moving the process forward to see what you can do to encourage your neighbors to also comply with defensible space regulations.
Sounds like great advice. Thank you, Carol Leone. Commissioner Lara, can you give us, we all know that the insurance policy of last resort is the California Fair Plan. This is when people get canceled, they can't get any other insurance policy. Can you give us an update on the California Fair Plan?
Absolutely. For those, as you mentioned, Senator, who may not know, the FAIR Plan is California's insurer of last resort. It is backed by the insurance companies, not by taxpayers, and they will write fire insurance for your home, even if no one else will. But this is coverage for fire only. To get additional coverages, that come with comprehensive insurance policies or your HO3, you have to buy additional wraparound coverage from an insurance company at additional cost. Last year, I directed the FAIR Plan to modernize and expand its coverage for homes, which had not changed in decades. In response, the FAIR Plan has just this week increased its available limits to $3 million instead of $1.5 million. The effective date for the increase was June 15. In addition, the FAIR Plan has begun accepting payments by credit card without additional fees. We'll implement a monthly payment plan later this year, as I've requested. So, you know, as we keep pushing, we want the FAIR Plan to continue to modernize and be able to meet the needs of, the needs of our California homeowners now.
Boy, that's fantastic, doubling down on the total policy limits and payments. So that's great. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
The next one we are at here is for the small business. Bianca, this is for you. We have tried finding a lender, that would work with us. However, they all say it is too risky at this time. Do you have a list of lenders that are willing to work with small businesses during this pandemic?
Yeah, thank you for the question. So the short answer is absolutely. We've compiled a vetted list of lenders on our website. If you head to Venturize, V as in Victor, E, N as in Nancy, T as in Tom, URIZE, Venturize.org, there is a list of technical assistance providers, organizations, mission-driven lenders, nonprofit lenders that are all vetted. And by vetted, I mean that they are all responsible operators. They have either made a commitment to transparency in lending and a clear disclosure of all the fees that are associated with those loans there. So if you head to Venturize.org, you'll not only find a list of alternative lenders, but alternative lenders that are safe. A CDFI, an organization in California, Opportunity Fund, released a study a couple years ago that showed that small business owners in California are taking out online alternative loans at an average APR of 94%. 94%. And some go as high as 235%. So if we want to talk about the health of our local communities and the health of our small business ecosystem in California, we need to address this issue. So Venturize serves to do that. But, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but one of the reasons that small businesses have found such a hard time finding a lender, a traditional lender, a Wells Fargo, a Chase to bank with, is because, frankly, it's not profitable for banks to lend to small businesses that want less than $250,000. Many small businesses don't want much more than $250,000, so, they're turned away from Wells Fargo because it's just not a profitable venture for the bank, and they hop online and they click on, the first thing that they see that says, we'll get you, $80,000, $180,000 in your account and get it to you fast. And this is true. These online lenders can get you money and they can get it to you quickly. The problem is the fees that are associated with all of these loans ends up putting small business owners in a cycle of bad financing. But again, Venturize.org, reach out to me or any of the folks on this call, and we'll be happy to put you in touch with folks that serve this area. A couple that just come to mind, Opportunity Fund, again, who I referenced earlier, they offer help for small business owners, low-cost loans, coupled with really what they call high-touch assistance, which means they will hold your hand throughout the process. They want to make sure that you are successful in the loan because they don't make money off of your loan by default. If you were to default. So there's multiple organizations like that. Working Solutions is another community lender in the area that has stepped up to help small businesses at this time. And one more resource, the Sonoma County EDB, the Economic Development Board of Sonoma County, also houses the SBDC, which is the Small Business Development Center. Small business development centers provide free one-on-one advising, business advising for you as a small business. If you're self-employed, you can also make an appointment there. The Napa Sonoma SBDC is run by Mary Cervantes, who is the executive director. She's great. SBDCs can help connect you to CDFIs. They can help you get loan ready. They can help you identify responsible lenders. They can also help you with your marketing. If you're, trying to figure out how to do business in this new normal, they can offer a lot of tips for free for you to figure that out. So those are just a couple of the resources that are available at Venturize.org. But if you're looking for like a one-stop shop, either reach out to me or head to Venturize.org.
Well, perfect. Thank you. Carleone, how can people who cannot afford an arborist get important tree work done?
Yeah, boy, that's a tough one. Tree work is expensive. And in some parts of Sonoma County, which have been either are in the fire footprint or are in areas that have been impacted by sudden oak death or one of the other tree pathogens that's just killing thousands of trees, it can be a real challenge if you're in a heavily forested area. And there's not a whole lot of help out there yet. I know that there's lots of movement to try to find ways to help folks deal with this kind of stuff. Permit Sonoma, at the County of Sonoma, we recently got a grant from FEMA for a pilot program that's going to provide defensible space inspections, structure hardening assessments, and then some incentive funding to help get both defensible space work and structure hardening work done. This project being a pilot, it's addressing limited areas in Sonoma County, and it's still in the early stages, so we don't have a lot up on the website yet about it, but that's what we're moving forward with in the next couple of months. We're really hoping that this will be a pilot that can help us to encourage these kinds of programs in the future. Doing things this way where you get the defensible space done and you address the structure hardening at the same time is a huge help. Any help we could get from the insurance companies would be great with this kind of stuff too, because I know that we're all looking for the same thing, which is that homes can withstand a wildfire. If you can, and there are other programs, depending on your parcel, that are available to have help. CAL FIRE has what they call the California Forest Improvement Program, or CFIP, which can provide funds to do a forest plan and do some work on the ground. The National Resource Conservation Service, there are various grantors out there. Typically, grants are available to groups rather than individuals, so typically you can't just sort of call up a funder and put in an application for your property. You need to be in a grant with another group, which brings me to the topic of community wildfire protection planning. CWPP, or Community Wildfire Protection Plan, is a way to look at risks within either a small community or a large community and start assessing where the highest risks are and what the mitigation strategies are that will reduce those risks so that they've been prioritized. This can be really helpful in getting grants. It's an important part of the grant process increasingly. I really encourage people to start local fire safe councils within your neighborhood, because that way your group can go in to try to get grant funds. So those are some things that can really help. Again, I know I sound like a broken record, right? But start at the house and work outwards. If you have limited funds to hire someone to take down trees, start with those near structure trees. Look on your downslope areas. Look on the areas where, if you know where those northeast winds are coming from, maybe concentrate over there. Prioritize the area according to the risk, and the highest risk is right next to the house. So go there first. And don't forget that in addition to the trees, your brushing materials are really going to be a tremendous contributor to the risk on your property. It's not just the trees. It's the brushing materials that get the trees going, which might be a little less expensive to deal with. You can always call your fire department or CAL FIRE and have somebody come out and do an assessment for you. That might help you prioritize where to do the work first. And just get it done as you can get it done. But forward motion is great, and I'm glad you're asking the question.
Yeah, just to add on to that, the legislature was in a really good position when this year started, and the governor had money in, and the legislature was agreeing with them to fund more of this type of debris removal and tree for risk mitigation for fires. Unfortunately, now we're in a position where, according to the administration, their numbers, $54 billion deficit. Now we're looking at perhaps, some bonding. We'll repurpose some already approved bonds, perhaps for this wildfire mitigation. So we'll get more information on that as soon as we can. So we're now going back to Insurance Commissioner Lara. Wildfire prevention can save the insurance industry a significant amount of claim payments. Will the insurance industry support funding training wildfire prevention technicians? These training programs can be taught at Santa Rosa Junior College or any junior college. These are essential living wage jobs, which can be filled by currently displaced workers.
Absolutely. You know, a training program such as what was suggested would make sense. And there is currently legislation pending, SB 1199, authored by Senator McGuire, that would make third-party inspectors a necessity. Many insurers already employ or contract with inspectors to review homes for eligibility. There's also existing organizations that are useful in this respect, including county-organized fire safe councils and FireWest community groups organized under FireWise USA. But definitely, this is it's a great idea, and I love that people are starting to think outside the box of how we can address this issue. But yes, definitely support what's being discussed and proposed.
Fantastic. Bianca, question for you here. How can small businesses without employees get financial assistance?
Great question, especially considering, you know, I think the last time we heard this number, it was maybe last year, the year before, but at least 30% of folks in California identified as self-employed in some way, gig workers, you know, they have side hustles, et cetera. Again, the Paycheck Protection Program is available for those folks. So if you have not yet explored that option, that's definitely one to explore. Again, there are numerous local county grants available, not everywhere, and a lot of them, you know, are you know, open and then they're not open. We're trying to keep a pretty close track of that on VentureEyes.org, but you know, also retail associations. You know, a lot of these self-employed folks have retail associations that they could be a part of. They're a great resource to go to as well.
All right, thanks. So, Carolyn, we're back to you already. And, you know, the commissioner may want to weigh in on this one as well. How is fire risk determined by CAL FIRE? And then the question, I guess, for the insurance commissioner and insurance companies, where can the public go to get access to any analysis, or is that available?
And, you know, I'm going to start with, I don't work for CAL FIRE. Clearly, I work a lot with the data that CAL FIRE produces through the FRAP program, which stands for Fire and Resource Assessment Program, FRAP. And if you Google FRAP CAL FIRE, it'll take you to that site, and you can look at all of the risk maps that are on there. It's pretty interesting. It's pretty fun to look at. And you can look at your own county. Most of this information is being generated through Geographic Information Systems, or GIS, data. And it combines a whole bunch of inputs like fire history, fire fuel, slope, all kinds of stuff, which all go into putting these models together. Where I am directly involved in looking at creating risk models is through the update of the Sonoma County CWPP. And I will say that check around and see if your county has a CWPP. Marin County has a great CWPP. Napa's, I know they're in the process of updating, as is Sonoma County's. Sonoma County's updated CWPP will have a tremendous amount of updated risk assessment information, which is based on LIDAR data from when they flew over a couple of years ago, and we have incredible resolution that will tell us exactly what the fuels are on the landscape, how much fine fuels at the ground level, all kinds of stuff. So we're working on bringing all of those elements in, including wind, typical wind patterns and projections, to really closely identify which parts of the county have the highest risk, which will really help us to inform where it is that we want to pursue grant funding to do large-scale fuels management projects that can help protect communities from the outside, while we're hoping that people have their defensible space on the inside. So that's what I can say about that.
Fantastic. Insurance Commissioner, do you want to opine?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I have Joel Lauscher from my office is on, who can give you a better perspective in terms of how insurance companies look at this issue. Joel, are you on?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Commissioner, and my respect to Senator Dodd, and thank you for
having
me. I'll mention that insurers use several ways to kind of evaluate fire risk. Just very quickly, Commissioner Lara already mentioned a couple. And one of the things they look at is the loss differences in their data that they have between different roof types. So their data is well known, shows that wood shake roofs are much more likely to have a fire loss. Therefore, many insurers either won't insure a wood shake roof or they will charge a much higher premium for that. They also evaluate risk based on protection class, so, you know, how your local fire department is staffed and equipped and trained is evaluated, and a score is assigned there. But the other thing the commissioner mentioned was using wildfire scores, and there are several private modeling companies that develop their own models of what develops higher risk or lower risk. The most well-known are CoreLogic and FireLine, but there are other companies such as Red Zone and Hazard Hub and Dusty AI, and all of those companies take data about the type of vegetation that's in place or the density of that vegetation and kind of consider a number of other factors, such as the aspect of the which direction the property is facing and how accessible it is to a fire department, and they assign a score to those homes. That's their wildfire score. And insurers then take those scores. For example, FireLine uses scores from 0 to 30, and they align how much they charge based on the lower your score, the lower your premium will be. And for many of the higher scores, they won't write the home at all. So they use, again, these wildfire models amongst many other tools to evaluate what your fire risk is at a particular home.
Okay, we'll be sending out a test to all the people that are out there on this. Make sure you will totally and completely understand it, can answer these questions. That was pretty darn complete, Joel. Thank you very much. Insurance Commissioner, before I close this virtual hearing, which I really appreciate you coming on board, would you like to make some closing remarks?
Thank you again, Senator Dodd. Thank you for your leadership and everything you've been doing, not only to help your constituents, but to help so many Californians that are affected by wildfires and other natural disasters. To my fellow panelists, thank you again. We're all in this fight together. To our business owners, again, I just wanted to reiterate that, look, insurance is complicated, and your number one priority is to keep your businesses open and service your customers. And we are here to help. If you have any question regarding your insurance as we enter fire season, time for you to look at your policy, look at your coverage limits, look at what your coverage and your individual policy says. And if you have any questions, give us a call. Again, do not be afraid to call us. It's a 1-800 number, but we have people, insurance experts ready to help you. That's 1-800-927-4357. That's 1-800-927-4357. You can also reach us through our website at insurance.ca.gov, and we look forward to assisting you. And hopefully, you know, we will get through this together, and you know, carry on like we always have. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Insurance Commissioner Ricardo Lara, for convening this virtual town hall. I know the customer service is a big part of their organization. And look, I know that the unemployment insurance department and DMV are really working hard to change that, but you will not have to wait days or weeks or hours or even to get responses back. They are really customer service focused. I appreciate, Ricardo, all that you do in that area. I'd also like to thank our excellent panelists and then to you, our constituents, for submitting questions. If your question did not get answered today, please contact my office directly, and we're glad to help. We've learned today about some of the challenges and resources available for small businesses. We need business owners to succeed. We need them hiring employees, paying their taxes, and contributing to their local economies. Please keep sharing your challenges and your ideas for solutions. Fire season has begun, and we urge you to make a plan for keeping yourself safe. Make defensible space if possible, prepare an emergency kit, and have a plan for evacuation. We know that these challenges can sometimes feel overwhelming. We will get through this, but we can only get through it together. Thanks to all of you for being on the line. Goodbye.
And ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using AT&T conferencing service. You may now disconnect.